Welcome one, welcome all, step right up, step right up, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 159 is coming at you right now. Howdy everybody, Portal Gaming Podcast, a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can go to www.theportalct.com. You can check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, @PortalGaming60. You can also check out live playthroughs, unboxings, and more reviews on our YouTube channel, Step Into The Portal. Search for us there or youtube.com/stepintotheportal. Portal Game Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, and I am so excited to be with you here today that I stood up to do the intro. So I'm sitting back down because it's been a little while. I looked in the last show released on October 18th. We've obviously got that YouTube channel going. I said, oh, it won't get in the way, and it's totally getting in the way of the podcast, but that's okay. I still think it's a fun place to go and a good connection in terms of all that. So we're just going to make sure this podcast comes out once a month. And boy, is it going to pay off in spades today. This episode, number 159, I am entitling The Force is Strong with this one. Because I am going to review... No. I'm going to attempt to review 21 games on here. And boy, howdy, are these some heavy hitters. These are some awesome games that have shown up for the end of the year. So 2020 on the gaming front is finishing strong. And there's two or three pretty solid games that I haven't even gotten a chance to play yet as much that I'm able to review. So there's a lot more. So yeah, that's my plan is I've got 21 games here in front of me. I have no idea how long it'll take, how exhausted I'll get. So I may have to pull back and not do all of them this episode. But my goal is to try to cruise through them all 5 minutes apiece. So that'll be an hour. So I think without further ado, here we go. We're going to jump in. All right. Check out our YouTube channel. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy Thanksgiving. All those kind of things. Whatnot. If you're in the Hartford, Connecticut, or accurately Manchester, Connecticut area, make sure to check out our store, The Portal. And you can find that just by searching for the store and find the address and everything. Alrighty, here we go. Alright, first up, I am proud to be able to talk about this game. This is Last Light, designed by my friend Roy Cannaday, and it's going to be published by Grey Fox Games. So this is totally a prototype that I got to play on Tabletop Simulator. In fact, I bought Tabletop Simulator, and I have played like this one game on there. I'll probably try to play Marvel Champions at some point, but I was happy to buy it and be able to play with Roy. And I played with John Cox from John Gets Games. We played a three-player game of Last Light. Man, let me just tell you, this game isn't even on Kickstarter. I don't like to review games that are on Kickstarter, but Roy is a really good friend of mine. So I wanted to make sure to give his game some coverage. But I'm just telling you, people, when this Kickstarter comes out, just jump on it. This is 4X in 2 hours. We played with three players. It was just over an hour. It plays all the way up to 8 players. It is so cool. It's really just got a simple hand mechanism mechanic where you're playing cards and then scooping them all back up eventually, kind of like a Concordia or a Race for the Galaxy or something like that. Race, you can play the same cards, so this kind of has the other one. And the whole key to the thing is this twisting center of the board with these circles that rotate. And that rotation makes it so that your ships kind of sail away from you. and they go and kind of interact with the other players because the galaxy's rotating. It's a beautiful thing. It looks like it's going to be gorgeous when they get this full production going. So I think it's a no-brainer back day one Kickstarter. And you can absolutely take my word with a grain of salt since Roy's a good friend of mine, and that's fine. But I just want to tell you how happy I was and how much fun the game was. And I think it's a race to 20 points, and I got 5, and I lost horribly, and I had a blast. Like, it's just one of those games you're just going to have fun, even if you don't do well. So Roy's made a great game there. Last Light, check it out when it comes to Kickstarter in 2021. All right, these are in no particular order. So we're just going to kind of go down the list. Actually, maybe I can do this in alphabetical order. Who knows? Let's try it. So first up is AlterQuest. So this is a game by Adam and Brady Sadler from Blacklist Games. And AlterQuest was kind of, if you look at the board, it looks like it's going to be HeroQuest. It's derived from HeroQuest, which of course just had a big Kickstarter, or whatever you want to call it. I shouldn't call it that, I guess, since it wasn't Kickstarter, but a crowdfunding campaign. And the board is kind of laid out. It's a square board. It's a dungeon crawler, and you've got all these unique heroes. What happens is you pick your heroes, and then you get a quest, you get a villain, and you get a threat deck. The threat deck tends to be minions, so I may look at it that way. And each of those gets shuffled, and they all can work together. So you might be fighting, you know, Bulks, this big frog villain, but you've got these pig minions, and then the quest deck might be like the search, and you're trying to find something. And so what happens is each time you open a door, you're going to draw from this feature deck. You're going to put a a piece of furniture in the room, and then a quest card is going to kind of attach to that with some kind of abilities and things that are happening related to that quest. Then everybody will draw one of those threat cards, which could be an event, a trap, or a minion. And then you're going to work your way through. You get three actions on your turn. It's got a great dice rolling mechanism where basically every side of the die has a symbol. You roll a certain number of dice, and then you can spend focus tokens for some of the sides. One of the sides has the exploding die, and if you don't spend the focus token, then you get focus tokens. Which is awesome. So you're basically always getting something by taking your action. You're not going to have a dead action where you just miss and get nothing. It's a great system. The characters all play different. I have played the game 10 times, I believe. I think 6 of those are solo, couple two-player. We did a 4-player one where that we streamed. That might be 9 plays, so maybe I'm off, but I thought it was 10 plays. I had one game that was not enjoyable. It was actually the game I played with Brian, and we did a quest with 2 players. It just wasn't that exciting. But hey, that's not my point. I'm not focusing on that one. This is a top 10 candidate for the year. I'm going to say that about a bunch of games on this list, no lie. But AlterQuest is absolutely enjoyable. I'm actually trying to seek out the extra content because I think more characters would be awesome to play with. So I want to try to do that and whatnot. I absolutely love AlterQuest. It is like opposite in the vein of Gloomhaven. Like, whatever Gloomhaven is, this is a dungeon crawler that goes to the other side with the dice rolling, crazy card mechanisms, all that, where things aren't as well known. And you're going to draw random stuff, not have all the information, but I absolutely enjoy it. I do also really like Sword and Sorcery, so I don't know where that fits in terms of dungeon crawlers. And, of course, there's the other one coming out, Descent 3rd Edition or whatever they're calling it. There's so many dungeon crawlers, it's hard to decide what you want to have, what you don't want to have, but hey, AlterQuest is awesome. We backed it at the store. There are copies there that are available. Check it out when it comes to retail, which I think is January. It's amazing. It's a great, great game. Absolutely love AlterQuest from Blacklist Games. All right, next up, we'll talk about Aquatica. Aquatica is from Arcane Wonders. It's in the Dice Tower Essentials line. I actually had a chance to play this with Larry, Brian, and Kathy at PAX Unplugged. So I think we talked about it there. If you go back a year's worth of podcasts, you'll hear that there, PAX Unplugged 2019. It would have just passed, I think, this year otherwise. So anyway, in Aquatica, it's another card hand management game. And you're like in the deep sea and you're trying to like control your kingdom to have glory points at the end. So basically you play a card on your turn, it's going to tell you what effect to do, and then there's one that lets you scoop back all your cards. So kind of like Last Light and Concordia and all those, it's got that system with a really small arc to it. Where the really key thing is that you grab these like underwater kingdom cards, and they slide into your board, but they slide upward, which is really neat. And they have all these abilities on them. So this one might tell you, oh, you get +2 coins the next time you try to buy something. You get +3 the next time you try to conquer one of those kingdoms. And you can spend those. And then some of them are just, hey, you can move another card up 2 slots. And you're trying to get those cards all the way, pushed all the way into your board. Once they're slotted all the way in, you get a Manta Ray, which is a little plastic token. Talk about those in a second. As well as that one now has the ability to score. So there's a little treasure icon. When you get that treasure icon, boom, you can take a card that has fully risen and you can put it in your score pile to score at the end of the game. That's basically going to be your score. In addition, you're trying to complete objectives, which are printed on the board, and then you can add different objectives. And each time you complete one of those, you take one of those mantas and you put it on a spot, and you're going to score like 8, 5, 3, 1 points or something like that for the order in which you did it. The game's going to end when somebody has 4 of their mantas out there. What do those mantas do? Well, they have the same symbols that are on the cards. Oh, add 1 gold, add 2 attack, whatever it is, and all those kind of things. So you can flip these over to gain those bonuses as well, but then you're adding those mantas to that board to be able to score points. It's a really fun game. I really enjoyed it a lot. It's short, and the arc of all of that, like, it's really trying to get you to combo all those different things together. Like, oh, this one lets me get money, but then this one lets me recruit a card, and blah, 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 because there's characters that you can recruit. So it wants you to, like, really be, like, kind of making those work together well, and if you can't get that and somebody else is, they're going to kind of run ahead with that a little bit, which is okay. It's a pretty fast game. Like, it says 60 minutes, but I haven't played it in 60 minutes. Even the time we played it, PAX Unplugged was faster than that. So, and I played it solo, and solo was interesting. I don't know. It doesn't really stand out in the world of, like, short engine-building games. I hate comparisons, but, like, Catalyst is something awesome to me. Wingspan is obviously something people like. It's shorter than Wingspan, for sure, though, in terms of all that. But it's a neat game if that deep sea diving thing is really your thing, or if card hand management, you want like a simpler Concordia, it's got that element to it. So all in all, it's a fun game. That is Aquatica from Arcane Wonders. I'm not going to end up going in alphabetical order, but I'm going to keep trying. So the next up is Beyond the Sun from Rio Grande Games. Yeah, I played so many games in this last month. It's unbelievable, and how good they were was awesome too. Ooh, I'm getting tired. Okay, so Beyond the Sun, boy, you open this board and it couldn't look more boring. It's literally just spaces for cards to be slotted in. Like, that's all the graphic design is. It's an awesome game. Another top 10 contender for the year for me. All right, so it's essentially a worker placement game. You got a worker in a couple single spots. What are you trying to do? Well, you're trying to progress technology, and then there's a separate little board where you're flying around to various planets. And you're trying to essentially, you know, build bases there or colonize those planets to score points. There's little achievements that are out, and based on the number of players, when a certain number of achievements have been completed, the game will end. And I think it's a, like, everybody gets one more turn, and then there's a last round or something like that. And then you're just going to add up your points from various things. So what's really unique here? Well, you have these dice, but they're actually not dice. They're really like resource cubes. And you're just doing all this upgrading. So your turn is really simple in that you do a worker placement, you go on that space, do whatever it says. Sometimes it'll say gain a technology. When you gain a technology, they're kind of in columns like 1, 2, 3, and 4, and they all are prerequisites. So I need a 1 before I can get a 2, or I might need 2 2s to get a 3, etc., etc. So when I gain one of these, I get to take one of my little cubes, which might be a population. And I can put that on the board space, and now I will have that will denote that I have that technology. Another player might not. There's some undiscovered ones, which is really neat, because then when I gain that one, I flip over kind of like a single-time event card. I get whatever bonus is on there. It may give other people bonuses as well. And then I pick a color, or sometimes it's told for me, like, oh, you're going to have yellow. And then you flip through the technology deck till you get 2 yellows, and you pick which one you want. Which really kind of keeps your choices limited and simple, but makes the game different every time you play it. So there's a decent number of those technologies. I could definitely see them adding an expansion to, like, double that technology deck, or those decks. But it's really interesting. And they are tiered, like, 2, 3, 4, so you draw from that pile. The 4s tend to have a lot of endgame scoring. Meanwhile, there's, like, that part's really simple. Then there's a whole other board where you're adding spaceships and you're flying around to colonize planets. And that's actually pretty simple, too. You get jump points, which is jump as in movement, like jump to light speed. And you can move around to these various planets, and you're trying to, like, basically have majorities, and then you add other features to it. So on the bottom of your player board, you've got little wooden tokens that give you, like, mining colonies and something for gaining population, maybe just training places. And you can put these out on the board, and as you uncover them, you get more things. At the end of your turn, you can then choose, like, one upgrade action. Do I want, or, like, one resource action? Do I want to recruit more people, or which I can then, like, put them in ships to fly around? Or do I want to get ore, which will allow me to pay for some of the worker placement spaces and some of the other spots that I can go to? So that's kind of the idea of what you're doing and what you're using for all that. Really, really, like, simple approach to a game, but tons of variability, which I think leads to a lot of replayability. Beyond the Sun, like I said, it's a contender for a top 10 game of the year. Just so awesome, so cool. There's an advanced mode where there's like a grid of tech cards, so you can see those kind of as they're coming out to plan for. And then there's like alternate boards where you have, like the regular game just has everybody start with a different die face, a different resource. But that one gives you actual like powers that you can use as well. So that seems kind of interesting. Great game, Beyond the Sun, Rio Grande Games. Okay, I've got to see here. Calico from AEG and Flatout. So you may have seen a picture of this one if you're kind of around the board game community. There's a tabby cat on the front, an orange tabby cat. And it's all snuggled up on a quilt. And this is a game about making quilts for your cats. And it's super cute. And there's lots of different cats, and they all have names. And there's like Maine Coon and short hair. And my Russian Blue is actually on the table here with me as I'm recording. She likes to get all up in my face. So you're kind of drafting tiles with patterns and colors, and you're placing them on your board, and you're trying to complete certain objectives or get a certain number of connected of color or pattern, and that will attract a cat to come over and hang out on your quilt while you're making it. And you're drafting from a set of three tiles, I believe, that are out there. A lot of people have really, really liked this game. We played it, Kathy, Brian, and I. It fell flat for us. We just didn't find the joy in the game. I want to play it again. It's been hard to get back out on the table with a different group because we just didn't like it. We felt like we were so limited in our choices, and none of us were getting the tiles out that we wanted, so you're just grabbing a tile. It does give you some sway for like, oh, you could put this here, and that gives you another place that you could go. Another option you could have, or like this is kind of a throwaway space, but that wasn't really interesting to have a throwaway space. You know, one or two of those would be fine, but we'll have to see. So, anyway, that was us. We didn't have strong impressions off of first play, but boy, there's so many people that have said this is like their game of the year, if not in their top games of the year. So, you know, that's my opinion, that's my review of it, that's how we felt. But like I said, I felt like because people are saying that, I wanted to get another play, and I just didn't get another play. But I didn't want to avoid reviewing it, because sometimes, you know, there's times I play a game once, and it was just so sour. I mean, it was sour. We were not having fun. We did finish the game, but we were like, well, there's the game, and there's the point. So, I don't even think any of us completed maybe more than one of the objectives. So, maybe we were just playing wrong, but hey. That's us and what we're doing there. All right, next up. Oh, sorry, that's Calico from AEG and Flatout Games. Dwellings of Eldervale. So a bunch of these you've probably actually seen our live plays of if you're on the YouTube channel there. Step into the portal. With obviously people being out of the store and unable to play there, we want to have an opportunity to still see the new games that were coming out. Because part of the livelihood is you show up on a Saturday or a Sunday where there's a gaming group, or Thursday night was a big one. Tuesday we had Marvel Champions, and you see the games and you go, oh, that looks cool, I want to try that, or I got to play that once, now I want to buy it, play it with people, you know, back at home or whatever. So hopefully this gives people a chance to see the games. So Dwellings of Eldervale we don't have in the store. We didn't back the Kickstarter, there wasn't a store one, I can't remember, but Larry had a copy, so we played this actually just yesterday on stream. And Dwellings of Eldervale is from Breaking Games. It's Luke Laurie. The production is gorgeous. It's got a whole bunch of miniatures with a wash on them, kind of like Unmatched with Restoration Games, which I really like because it's like, you know, they got a good presentation without waiting to be painted. And as much as I tried to dip my hand into painting, it wasn't really my thing. So it was fun for a little bit. So what are you doing in Dwellings of Eldervale? It's a worker placement fantasy game. So you've got a ton of different races. I believe there's like eight different, elements. And each of those has a race, two races associated with them. So I think there's 16 different races that you could be. Now there are minor tweaks between those. So they're going to be, oh, this worker does this little different ability. This worker does this different ability. But it's fun. You know, you're playing that one for sure in terms of that. You're trying to score points over the course of the game. And the worker placement spaces are actually hexagon tiles that go out on the board. And they're going to either have pre-printed icons or little tokens that you collect, like a little random pile. Or they're going to have an enemy that comes out, like an air elemental or a crocodile or all these monsters that are out there in terms of that. So you're placing your workers out on the board, and you're collecting whatever resources are there. And then there's different workers, like you have a dragon, and they might have a special ability. They can fly two spaces away from your other workers, and you've got a magician or wizard, I think, and you've got a warrior because you can actually attack other people in the game. Eventually you recall everybody, or I think it's regroup. When you regroup, you can like use each of your workers for some kind of bonus, like, ooh, let me recruit another worker or gain a resource, or you can put these little dwellings out that are going to let you score endgame points and in-game points. So all that's happening as you're building these dwellings, which are really cute because they're little like cappers that go on the heads of the workers. The workers stay out, that worker will stay out there, so you'll have one less, which is a good mechanism for kind of keeping the AP of the game getting too long, or just the length of the game, the ability to do something. But you put these little like roofs on their heads, so they make little houses, which is cool. Meanwhile, you're moving up all these order tracks, and it's going to be like a multiplier. So you're collecting cards, you're building these dwellings, and each of those are going to be multiplied by kind of your strength in each of those eight elementals. Although it's limited a little bit more. Like, I think we played with four elementals with two players, so I think it would only be eight with in a four-player game, if I've got my math correct there. Sounds like it. Four, six, eight for two. Oh, it has a five players? Not sure. Can't remember exactly how it is. Yeah, but that's kind of the idea. You're putting all those out there, and then you can pull them back. So how does the combat work? It's totally Risk, if you played Risk before. I roll a certain number of dice, you roll a certain number of dice, and then we're just comparing high die rolls. If I roll a 6 and you roll a 6, we go to our next highest roll. I rolled a 5, you rolled a 4, I win. You rolled a 5 as well, we go down to the next roll, next roll, next roll. So more dice will just allow you to have an easier time to win. And then you've got like these cards you can collect and resource management. It was just so much fun. Thematically, it was just that cool fantasy. I know standard fantasy sometimes gets a shun, but this one was neat and had some pretty cool races. There was like pirates and clerics and nothing abnormal, but it was just cool. I absolutely loved it. I love the production. You know, it just kind of reminds me of really doing that really nice production for a Eurogame, kind of a la Brass with the new version. And yeah, I had an absolute blast playing Dwellings of Elderbale. Another top 10 of the year contender. That was one play, so I would see where it goes from there. But still, nonetheless, that's why I named this episode The Force is Strong with this one, which I think is a title I've used before, but hey, this is, yeah, this is impressive. There's a lot of really good games here, so I wanted to get those out. Dwellings of Eldervale, Luke Laurie, Breaking Games. All right, next up is Elf, Journey from the North Pole. This is from Funko Games. This is a game I picked up just at Target for like $15. And of course, if you like Elf the movie, and it's that time of year with Christmas and all those things going on, the game is just joyful on that front. It's not a great game. What are you doing? You're all working together to get Buddy the Elf from North Pole to New York City. So there's kind of it's a puzzle piece map board that you put together because the box is shaped like Buddy's pointed hat. It's a triangle. And you're playing these little path cards to try to make a little path. They go all over, and you can actually go off the board and all over the table if you want to. And you play as many path cards as you want, and then draw two more at the end of your turn. There are these teeny tiny little cards, which are a little frustrating and annoying. But honestly, they're frustrating and annoying, but they're kind of cute. Like, it kind of makes sense in the game. And you're trying to stop at various locations. Everybody has a card of, like, secret places they want to go. They want to go visit the narwhal. They want to meet, you know, I don't know, they want to go to the world's best coffee and all those things from the movie if you've seen it. And you're just kind of traveling around your turn. If you pass through these places, you set them up and they're worth 3, 2, or 1 star. So I might be going to the narwhal because I'm going to get 3 points, but somebody else gets 2 points for that. Eventually, somebody will get us down to New York City. They'll get 2 bonus points. The game's over. We see what our points are. It's like 20 minutes, 15 minutes, something like that. It's fun. It's fun for what it is. I could put on the movie. I could play this. Like, it just reminds me of the movie. It's nothing people should run out and get for the board game's sake. But it was fun related to the movie. That's all I'm really expecting out of this. I'm not expecting some amazing, you know, strategy Euro game. And it's pretty good with kids in terms of all that. So, all in all, I found it fun, not earth-shattering. I think I told other people, like, I would put this in the bin of Christmas stuff and just pull it out at Christmas. Almost like a puzzle or Legos or decorations and be like, oh, we forgot about this game, rather than have it on my shelf to play year-round, right? You bring it out to play for that season. Elf Journey from the North Pole, Funko Games. I'm waiting to get my order wrong here, but so far I think I'm doing okay for getting all this correct in terms of alphabetical order. Next up is Gods Love Dinosaurs. So we played this on our, I don't know, what ended up being like two streams. It was right around 12 hours that we did for Extra Life. Kathy, Brian, Larry, and I streamed and raised money there. And thank you for everybody who watched that and who donated money and all that. So Gods Love Dinosaurs is from Pandasaurus Games. And you're all building your own tableau. You have a dinosaur in the middle, like a little dinosaur meeple. And then you have, oh gosh, frogs, rats, and bunnies, which are your other ones as well. On your turn, you're going to draft. So you're drafting tiles. So you draft from a set of tiles up top, and then you add it to your tableau. And there's kind of two in each column, and when the second one is taken, that animal type will activate. So if it's one of those three prey, rats, bunnies, and frogs, then they will kind of move to adjacent space. No, not move, they will multiply, so you'll add more little tokens to your board. Eventually, you can get hawks and tigers, which are predators. They then have to move in a certain pattern to gobble up the prey, and then you can add more of them. And then the dinosaur token is under one of those columns, and it will trigger along with those. So then the dinosaurs can move, like, five spaces, but they have to end up back on a mountain space, and they can gobble up the predators or the prey. If you gobble up predators, you get eggs, which are victory points. If you gobble up prey, hey, it just happened. But they have to eat something. Anybody that doesn't eat dies. So that's kind of the idea. So the sometimes it confuses people. Gods Love Dinosaurs, because dinosaurs are the top of the food chain in the game. That's where it's coming from. And you're just playing through till all the tiles are gone, and then you're going to add up how many eggs you have in your nest. It actually has more complexity than I just made it sound. I broke down the explanation of the game, but there's a little more complexity to where you're moving and how you're placing tiles and who's where. But all in all, I didn't find that it had too much going on. It was kind of neat. I like dinosaurs. And there was some pathing. You kind of learn some things and stick with things. And, you know, there's some replayability there, but I wasn't going to find it to be amazing. But it's a great production. It's really neat. It probably can sway pretty well towards a family game. So I could see that being a lot more exciting, where kids and other people were excited in terms of playing something like this. But, yeah. Gods Love Dinosaurs. I enjoyed it. You could see our playthrough there on the marathon. All right, that is Pandasaurus Games. Next up is Haunted Mansion. So this is Disney's Haunted Mansion. It's based on the ride at Disneyland and Disney World, which we went on just a few years ago. Zephyr got a great kick out of this because of having gone on the ride and everything and remembering that. It's a really simple family game. You're collecting ghosts. So the center is spinning around, which is supposed to be like you're on the ride in the seats. And it's spinning around. So you can get to any room, and you're just adding ghosts every turn. Then you've got those hitchhikers, which if you've been on the ride, they kind of turn sideways. You're looking in a mirror, and there's, like, ghosts sitting in your chair with you. So you can collect these hitchhiker cards, which, again, are those teeny-weeny cards that they use for Elf. They're more frustrating here because there's, like, a stack of them that you're drawing off of. And whoever collects the most of those is going to lose their highest category of points. It's a big set collection where you're collecting dancers and you're collecting the paintings that are famously in the elevator at the beginning of the ride. It's hard to explain it to you if you haven't been on the ride. It's fine. Again, I don't want to disparage anybody for not doing that, but it makes a lot more sense having been on the Disney attraction in terms of all that. It's a pretty fun little set collection game. You know what you're going after. You're chasing things. There's a ton of cards that come out based on the number of players. Kids had really enjoyed this. We haven't pulled it out really as much since. It's a pretty enjoyable game. So that one was pretty fun. Haunted Mansion. You know, this is one to kind of stick on the shelf. Oh, yeah, we like that. Let's play that again. It's a good Saturday afternoon kind of game. So that was neat. Especially if you've been on the ride. Although, I think it's still a fun game if you haven't. But I don't know that I can be the best to judge that. All right, looks like a lot of games for the end of the list. All right, Oh Hanami. Oh, Ohanami. Yeah, I believe is the game. So this is a little card game from Pandasaurus Games, and it's kind of really neat. It's like very zen. You're building like a Japanese garden, and you're adding rocks and water and what is the other thing? Greenery to your garden. And there's like various scoring stages. So you're kind of drafting cards, passing around the table, and you get to play two cards or choose two cards, then choose to play them. And they just have numbers 1 to 120. And you're making three sets where you can go up or down, but you can't put in between the cards. So if I go 70 and then 82, I can't play 77 in between, but I could play 83 on one side, I could play 69 on the other side if I wanted to. And then after the first draft, you score just water. And then after the second draft, you score water and greenery. And then you score water, greenery, and rocks. And then at the end of the game, you score cherry blossoms as well. Huh, that's the fourth thing I remembered. And cherry blossoms have like a big scoring set collection if you get a whole bunch. You know, you want to get way up in the numbers. And like water scores a little bit, but every round, etc., etc. So they score a little bit more. It plays out well in terms of numbers as to what you want to do. That's the game. It's just a really chill, like, we played at the counter several times. And it was fun. People compared it to the game. The game is, it's the same mechanism there, but there's no drafting, and it's cooperative, and that's a little more, like, puzzly, read the other players. I found that a little more engaging. This one's just kind of like, hey, if I had this in my pocket and I was traveling, we could play. It's weird now. Like, at a hotel, or a restaurant, or, you know, an airplane. Maybe not an airplane, but maybe, you know, an airport. But all those things just sound so funny now that we're not traveling as much, or at all, for the most part. So, that is Ohanami from Pandasaurus Games. And almost all these that I'm reviewing are in our store. I think Elf I got at Target. I don't know if we have that one. And Last Light is Roy's, and Dwellings of Eldervale we don't have available yet. But just make that note if you're in the area in terms of that. Okay, Ohanami will be followed by Princess Bride, the adventure book game. All right, so Princess Bride is one of the greatest movies of all time. And this game is designed to be played in six chapters while you watch the movie. They take about 15 minutes each. It is a very simple system of hand management, just playing cards and needing certain cards to achieve objectives. But the way the six chapters get played, and the fact they use the same mechanism of play a bunch of cards, draw two cards, is awesome. And you play through the scenes of the movie or various scenes of the movie, and it basically takes an hour and a half, which is the length of the movie, and is incredibly enjoyable. It's neat because you're, in order to win, you're trying to keep the grandson that the grandfather's reading to from getting bored. And if he gets bored, then you lose, you start over. If he gets bored again, then that's game. He didn't like the story, so you're trying to keep the story moving. It is not an amazing game, really, but what they did with it is extremely engaging, and by far the theme. If Princess Bride brings you in this game, you will love it. If you don't care a lick for Princess Bride or actually actively despise it, don't go anywhere near this game. You're not going to find a good game here. I found it great. I think I've sold like three times, although I found that playing two-handed is way different. I don't think true solo actually works because there's a whole trading mechanism where you can trade cards, and that doesn't exist in solo. So if you really wanted to solo, I would put a little set of like four cards out or three cards that you could trade with, because I think that's a key element of the game, just to make sure you have the right cards that you need. The best part is you gain these special cards with abilities on them, and then they just persist. So as you play each chapter, the first chapter I got three of those, the next chapter I got three more. So now the deck is getting better and better as you're going through, which is great. Then you start drawing those cards and being able to use them, which was really clever in their design. So that is Princess Bride from Ravensburger. I really enjoy it as a huge fan. It's not a top 10 contender for the year, but it was definitely a nice, relaxing game to be able to play. I guess it's family weight, but I don't know which families are into Princess Bride, you know? It's definitely a movie from, like, more my childhood or, you know, a little after that, whichever. Okay, where are we now? Ah, see, I missed one. I knew it would happen eventually. So let's go to Mysterium Park from Asmodee. I do know that's M. So Mysterium Park is Mysterium in 30 minutes. So if you're not familiar with Mysterium, it's like Clue, whodunit. You're trying to figure out, you know, who the murderer was, where, and with what weapon. So this cuts it down to a circus, like a traveling circus, I guess, or a park, theme park, I don't know. And it's who and where. And you're just doing two rounds. And the ghost is passing these cards, and everybody's trying to figure out where they are. And it's just a 3x3 grid where you're trying to figure out which is your character, which is the other person's character. And then the same with the locations. You got 6 rounds to do it. And if you guess what it is, you get it. But the cards are like Dixit-style cards with very abstract art that you're trying to use. So I like the package. The idea that they're trying to tell you which people didn't do it is a lot easier in this one because it was confusing in the other one where there's a whole group of people. It works. I think I'd rather play Mysterium because it's a little bit longer, but it doesn't really matter. Like, they're the same game. It's kind of just packaged up a little bit nicer. We found these cards a lot harder to use. We were also playing at some lower player counts. I feel like there could be a little bit of scaling, like regular Mysterium. The hard mode was you have 3 more of anything than the number of players. So if you're playing with 6, you have 9 characters out, and that makes it tough. But this one would have like 9 even for 3 players, which was a lot. So that was one part that I thought I might just kind of scale it a little bit, help people out. There is one where it's like, oh, that person ends up being a witness. So if anybody guesses, it tells you, nope, guess again. So they kind of give you one free guess on that. But they do give you 3 rounds to guess for each, so it's not so bad. But for whatever reason, we just found the cards really tricky. So I don't know. If you haven't played Mysterium, it's a great jumping in point. Or if you just need Mysterium to be a little shorter for whatever reason for your group, it's great. But we've played Mysterium like a lot. And I'd play either, really, is what it comes down to. But I like Mysterium a little better. There's a little bit more to it. But there is some other rules that people don't like with these tokens where you try to guess whether people are right or wrong. And we find that enjoyable, but a lot of groups don't like it. So that's probably the major change that a lot of people will like, is getting rid of those tokens. But we actually like the tokens, whereas most people don't. All right, Mysterium Park from Asmodee. What's up next? We got a bunch of R's here. So Reavers of Midgard. So I had played Reavers of Midgard a while back, and then got a chance to play again recently. And Reavers of Midgard is a follow-up of Champions of Midgard. So first off, I don't think I like it better than Champions, although I haven't played Champions in a while. Champions holds that special place, and that's the first game I ever bought at the first Gen Con I ever went to. So it's got a little bit of nostalgia factor, but I still really like the game too, especially with the expansions. Reavers is much more of a worker placement game, and it's got a really neat mechanism where I place a boat, in this case, and then I get the action at like a really good factor, and then it diminishes from there around the table, which is really neat. And then with 2 players, you get to place 2 boats. It has a separate side of the board. There's just a lot of like collecting of dice. In this one, you don't really roll dice as much as you collect them and roll them, and then you know what symbols you have, as opposed to rolling them on the spot when you're trying to fight things off. And it's really just a Euro game. I mean, the dice rolling, they allow you to go on the little, like, you can go sail, and you can fight monsters, and you could choose to roll, but you could also just spend dice. So it's really like resource collection. Probably the most joyous part of the game is you can hire crew members. And crew members can either, they're like multi-use cards. So they give you dice, then you could choose to get more dice. You could get like an upgraded ability for using them and making like certain dice faces wild based on their color. Or you could get an ability every time somebody picks a certain action that you get to do. So it's like really fun to recruit those and figure out what you want to do with them. And then you're just collecting resources and you're trying to get fortresses and towers and walls and treasure in like set collection and all these ways that you can score points and you can like take over territories that score points every turn. So it's just a big point salad-y game. It's definitely a cut above the rest though. Like it's solid fun. It moves, but it also has those like moments of real thought, which I think is part of the joy of it to me, is that like it's not incredibly slow. But it's not so fast that like it's blindingly over and you don't really know if you made good or bad decisions in terms of all that. And there's just lots of little clever extra pieces to kind of round out the game. It's a great production. It's gorgeous with all the colors and everything and like some sheen to the board and the cards. It's another one that we still, I think we still have a few copies at the store. So yeah, I really liked it. I'd like to go back and play Champions and kind of compare them, but like, even though they're both worker placement, they're just very different. Like, Champions has that dice rolling, and with Valhalla, things can die, and Reavers is like very much like collect your resources, which happen to be dice that you roll, and then know what you can do with them. So they kind of veer on that front. But yeah, Reavers of Midgard. Is it a 2020 game? I don't even know. No. Because it was at Gen Con. Oh, gosh. It was at Gen Con 2019. So it's a 2019 game. It would be close. It'd be like a contender for 11 for me this year. But it's not from this year. So there's that. All right, we're rolling along at 40 minutes. Got a bunch of games left here. So let's keep going. All right, next up is Runestones from Queen Games. So this is another one that I saw at PAX Unplugged last year. I always have to say 2019. And didn't get a chance to play. And wow, yeah, we played this on that same like 12-hour stream that we did for Extra Life. And I had played it a little bit, I think maybe twice with Kathy prior to that. It's just a cool, another hand management, like kind of deck building game. So you're all druids in this forest and you're trying to kind of like get to the throne by getting 65 points. And that sounds funny, like kind of cheesy. But yeah, you're trying to get to the throne. And we play with like all the expansions and everything. And it's really simple again. A lot of these games we've been playing that are kind of on the simpler side of rules. So either you can recruit new characters to go into your deck by discarding characters with colored symbols, or you can play to like character creature cards, just kind of like fairies and, I don't know, all these mystical forest creatures. And they have numbers on them. So you trigger the effects of both cards, which are all sorts of things. Roll a die to get resources, collect these colored gems, get straight up victory points, recruit another card, whatever it is. And you play those. The higher card is now out of the game, and the lower card goes into your deck. So you're thinning your deck while adding to your deck, and the decisions are just really interesting on that space. And then the last thing you can do, which is basically how you score points, is you can make artifacts with the gems. So there's like different colored artifacts, and you have to hand in sets of gems. So if there's a red one that's at the three space, you have to discard three red gems. Then you make that artifact. And there tends to be some kind of upgrade, whether you get points, roll the die, some other bonus. And you're kind of working your way through that. And then after you make those artifacts, you can trade in different colors to make runestones. And runestones give you pretty significantly powerful upgrades. I wouldn't say they're like game-breakingly powerful. It doesn't get to the point of like Glory to Rome or Marco Polo, those games that notoriously have extremely powerful abilities. But they're solid. Like, one of them is be able to play three cards on your turn, which is probably the most powerful of them all, if you can keep your deck together and whatnot, as well as other things. Then with the expansions, we're able to like mix and match those runestones, as well as there's like a forest with like mushrooms that you go through, and there's like night, like dark fairies or something that have the bonuses you can get. It's really interesting. I mean, it's just in that classic like card playing, hand management, resource management, Euro, which is just so many of what I've seen of this year. This would be a top 10 game contender for the year, but it's a 2019 game, so it won't be there. But I really, really enjoyed Runestones. Great game from Queen Games. All right, next up is The Search for Planet X. This is from Renegade Game Studios. So this is a pure deduction game. There's an app that goes with it, and everybody's using the app. I think you can kind of use one, but you get it on your phone, you put a code in, and then you go through the app, and you're trying to find the mysterious planet X in our solar system, and you're just receiving all this information, and other people's are getting information that you're getting some of. And in the basic game, there's 12 sectors, and in the advanced game, there's 18 sectors, and you're just kind of like getting information, like, oh, you know, basic information like comets always appear, no, asteroids always appear next to each other and certain other things. And you're just getting information like there are no comets that are next to asteroids. And now you're trying to make that note and figure out where everything is as you go around. And then you can make guesses as to where things are. And you score points at the end of the game for those kind of becoming right, like theories, I think they are. And now that gives other players information like, oh, your theory was right. So now I know that that place has a dwarf planet. Eventually you're trying to find Planet X, and one player can guess that, and then other players can kind of do the same to score points. That kind of triggers the end of the game, but everybody gets one more guess as to where it is. Everything's run by the app, so you're told, oh, I was right, I was wrong, or you're told the information secretly, and there's certain things that get shared. That's it. It's a pure deduction game. I didn't enjoy it on a solo play I did, but then I got a chance to play with Kathy again and kind of understood a little bit more and then played solo myself again. It's pretty fun. If you're into that whole deduction thing, it works out pretty well. But it's tough because you're gaining a lot more information than you realize, which is kind of classic of a lot of deduction games. It's not as straightforward as Clue because you're kind of getting like multiple pieces of information. But yeah, really neat game. If you're just looking for that deduction element, you know, the space theme is just part of it, but the theme isn't, other than like you're looking through sectors. I don't know. It doesn't feel that strong. But the deduction is pretty strong in the game. So that one is neat. Search for Planet X from Renegade Games. Next up is Sovereign Skies, Deep Waters. What do I still have left? You got this one. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All right. We got 5 more games after this one. So 6 games. Here we go. Deep breath. All right, Sovereign Skies from Deep Water Games. So this is a rondel, and it's a rondel of all these planets. And ooh, it's been a little bit since I played this game, so I'm trying to remember. And so you're trying to... Ooh, what is the actual goal in Sovereign Skies? Hold on 1 second. Okay. Hey, I did pretty well today trying to remember all these games, and then all of a sudden I had a little brain fart. So I grabbed the game here. So... the goal is to get victory points by recruiting senators and by gaining control of planets and whatnot in this little rondel. And each of the 6 tiles, hexes, makes up that rondel and those planets. And then there's little token tiles you can grab as you activate those planets or recruit those senators. And when 2 of the stacks run out, the game will end. You'll finish off the round, etc., etc., and score points. So it's really simple. You're just going to move your mothership like forward 1 space, but you can pay energy to turn around or to go additional spaces. So if you have enough, you can actually just go all the way around the rondel. And then when you get there, you can do 1, 2, or 3 actions. If you only do 1, you gain energy. If you do 3, you spend energy. And if you do 2, it's just neither or. Neither of those happens. And you're dropping off like little extra ships to try to be able to like activate those planets. And you can gain like cards. Each of them has like a card. You can only have 1 of those. And then you can use those cards as sets to recruit senators or other places where there's little tokens. And as well as each planet has its own little action that you can do. Being able to construct or recruit a senator or activate a base or... this pledge action where you can actually steal some of the tiles from other players and use your cards to gain victory points and whatnot. It's just a really clever, tight rondel. We found a little bit in one of the games that like that pledge action got a little strong if one player lets it, but I think people just have to know and stop them. But it is like quick. It's like 30, 45 minutes of just really like plan, execute. And it was really, really fun. You know, the theme is kind of like there's a planet where everybody wants, you know, there's a solar system where everybody wants to be in power. And in order to be in power, you have to get all these people on your side. I mean, it's, you know, been there, done that. But the game is solid play. I don't remember if I played this solo. I remember reading through the solo rules, but I think I ended up playing a 2-player solo game, which is often what I do instead of playing the true solo, because 2-player lets me learn the game to teach it to other people. In terms of that. So that is how that one goes. That is Sovereign Skies from Deep Water Games. And hey, I haven't mentioned designers, but since I kind of botched that one a little bit, Aaron Andrew Wilson designed a great game in Sovereign Skies. I would put it right outside my top 10 for the year, but a solidly fun game. This is totally one that, like, if I was at a convention with people like, oh, you want to play this? Oh, let me teach this. Let's sit down right now. Right? Those kind of games. That was exciting. All right, here we go. Wow, I'm looking at games that are still on this list, and they are incredible, like Stygian Society from Ape Games and Kevin Wilson. Now I'm saying designers. Stygian Society, so the first notable thing is that you've got this tower that you build, that you set up on the table, and it is a cube tower, but it's got some cool elements to it. So your goal is to ascend this tower, steal the wizard's loot, get to the top, and defeat the wizard. So I guess you're kind of bad guys. I don't know, maybe this is a bad wizard. But you're working your way up together as a team, so it's a cooperative game, and that tower is the center of everything you're doing. So there are 4 characters in the game, and everybody takes 1 of those characters, and then they'll have an ability, and then you have like a deck of bonus abilities. So you start with one of those, and they're tiered 1, 2, and 3. And on your turn, you pick an action, which generally is you drop cubes in the tower. And some of them get stuck in the tower, and some of them can actually shoot out, and there's a little crypt. It's a little, like, plastic, like, graveyard? I don't know, that's a weird thing to say. It sounds too... just fenced-in area. And they can actually jump, and if they jump into there, they count as double cubes. But you are also dropping peril cubes in there. What's neat is every floor, you draw a random floor card, and it tells you what monsters you're fighting, like their health, their special abilities, and that really changes up the game. I mean, what you're fighting, and what floor you're on, and all that stuff, really you have to come up with a plan of how you're going to drop these cubes. And then you're spending the cubes to heal, you're spending the cubes to like attack in various ways. Some have ranged attacks, some have to attack the things that are in the front. And what's really clever in the game, where they kept it great for scaling, is that like the whole party tracks as one. You have a group health, you have group experience, you have group peril, which is going to determine like how well you do with treasures and other like just effects that trigger on each floor. Like it might say, oh, everybody, you know, for each player, you take one damage, and you take a damage if you get to a certain peril level. You beat that level, you draw a card to see if you have any peril. You reset your peril, you get treasure cards, you go to the next level. The third level is like a mini boss, and the top level is a boss. The game is hard, but I love it. Like, dropping those cubes and making that plan. One of them is just drop a boatload of cubes in for other players so that they could then use those cubes. So you really have to strategize. It can't just be, this is my best ability, this is my best ability, this is my best ability, this is my best ability. And then you have group XP, so when you level up, everybody levels up, and you like you need 7, then we get to 7, the threshold is 8, then it bumps to 9, 10, 11, 12. And every time you level up, you can either take a random card of the higher level, or you can pick your card from the level you currently have or below. That's awesome, because now you really make some cool decisions, and you can kind of make your character different, which I really, really like. So I really enjoy this game. I haven't had, like, a perfect playthrough of it. I played a lot with, like, kids, or Kathy agreed to play one night late, and we just played to that third boss. Played a little bit at the store, and we were struggling. It was, like, really hard. So I still need, like, that solid play to say where this game is. To me, it's a top 10 contender. But like I said, I haven't had that. I haven't tried solo. You play with 3 characters. I think that's one weird part of the game, is that they say it's not really well balanced at 2. There's no way to play it at 1. Because you like one character really is like a healer. One character is like a thief. One's a magician and one's a knight. And they all have their abilities. The knight can block, or warrior. The warrior can like block damage on their turn. So that's really helpful. The healer can heal. The thief like does all this other damage and range and sneaky things and gets rid of cubes. So they work really well together in terms of all that. So I still need a solid play of it, which I think I just need to set up and play solo sometime in terms of that. But I just find all these abilities, like your characters get so interesting, and the choices and the cooperation is just really interesting. Like, oh, we got to find ways to cooperate, which is the best in cooperative games, when it's not just, oh, we're all working together and there's obvious best decisions, or I'm just going to do whatever I do while you go get a snack. Like, oh, we're actually talking it out. So I still want to stream this one, so I think we're going to stream this at some point. And Larry and I might play 2 characters each just to get the 4-player feel, because I think that'll show off the game at its best. That is Stygian Society from Ape Games. All right, here is a contender for one of the best-looking, probably the best-looking game of the year, which is Tidal Blades from Skybound and Druid City Games, which is James Hudson's company there. And Tidal Blades comes in this big box, and it's so cool. It's got all these miniatures that are just gorgeous, and it feels to me like Moana. You're like on these islands, and it's got that like bright, like summertime island beach feel, and it's like a competition where everybody's in this Tidal Blades competition, but meanwhile monsters are attacking the islands or the city, and you're trying to fight them off. And it's a big dice rolling game, so you're collecting dice to try to like complete these challenges, and you're worker placing on the different islands, and you're trying to like score all points in all sorts of different ways, as well as fighting off those monsters to score points and protect yourself from them. And the dice rolling is really interesting, because you can basically, you roll, and you roll like a damage die along with your regular dice, and you can constantly like manipulate your dice and re-roll as many times as you want, but that damage die is going to kind of keep damaging you. So it's like you try to do this big, you know, surfer move, but you flip over so you get hurt. So you need this shell shield, that, and you discard a shell onto your shell shield. It blocks it. But then when you get a certain number of shells on your shell shield, you could spend them to, like, turn a die to any side. The whole thing is just so well thought out in terms of what you're going to do and how things are kind of working and mitigating if you don't roll well. And you could keep rolling till you complete those challenges. You tuck them under. You're collecting sets of cards. You're getting victory points for things you're doing. There's a little market to buy upgrade abilities. Oh, and then your character has dials that are going to give you different stats. So one of your stats is like plays off of these style cards that you can play. And so the higher you are in that, and I forget which dial is which, so I apologize. I want to say that one is spirit. But the higher you up on that, like the more things you get from playing those cards. So now you're favoring playing those cards. But somebody else is like leveling up their own deck or like leveling up their character basically and getting more cards from their character deck. Because there's all these, you know, specific characters that are in it with their own decks. And you're getting special abilities that kind of change up the way you're going to play. What's the other island? The other island goes around and collect resources. There's like squishy fruit to spend and shell. The thing is gorgeous. It comes with this bowl, dice bowl, that is like, it's got like a waterfall. It's just a gorgeous like looking stadium where you roll in. It's like you want to roll in it. It's so nice. Probably the best production of the year. A solid, solid game to go behind it. A top 10 contender. Again, Tidal Blades from Skybound Games. Absolutely love it. Been a blast. I haven't played the solo, which everybody says is really cool. So I need to do that, but gosh, look at how many games I played this month. It's getting crazy. All right. What's up next here? The Viscounts of the West Kingdom. So this is the sixth game from Garfield Games here. The third in the Of the West Kingdom series. And Viscounts is another Rondell game. So it's kind of like a little deck builder. You're going to play a card onto your board. It's going to have a number. You're going to move your knight kind of around the rondelle. And you have some options because there's kind of like a path that goes up and down or straight across. And then you're going to trigger a space. And you're trying to like help build this castle that's in the center as well as acquire cards and people in the kingdom. It's kind of this idea of shift from like king rule to the people have a play in how things are working. So you're trying to hire all these villagers to be in your deck. To do things so that they can help you and kind of have some form of power in the kingdom is the idea. Very Euro-y in resource collection. There's little buildings you can build that you can add out onto the board, so then you're going to like upgrade your abilities and get one-time benefits from there. If you build adjacent to somebody else or even your own building, there's like a resource connected that you're both connected to that you get once those are completed. And you're kind of playing through your cards there. Scoring points, moving around. It's a solid game. It's really, really fun. Now, it's hard in like Of the West Kingdom and Of the North Sea and all those to not find your favorite. And Paladins is hands down my favorite. So it doesn't jump ahead of that. But it's neat. I mean, again, I broke that down so simple. But you're trying to play a card that tells you how far you're going to move and then choose the space you want to move to. And then do you want to hire the villager or you can actually pay them to go away so you can get to the villager below them and then trigger this ability. Do you want to gain that? Do you want, like, it's this whole tiered structure. It reminds me actually a little bit of Magna Storm that I really, really like in that piece. It did feel a little bit like some people could just kind of really work the rondelle and the inner track is a little shorter and that seemed a little bit better in terms of that. But there's just so many things going on. I gave you the simple rundown of the game, but it's really neat. I would love to get a play in. Another one that I hear people saying the solo is really fun. I don't know that gets all these solo games. It's hard for me. I tend to play Marvel Champions a lot solo. But other stuff is a little trickier. But I want to try them. They sound interesting in terms of all that. But great, great game. Viscounts of the West Kingdom. Another one that we have available at the store. All right. Here we go to the W's. There's two games to go. So first up here is Warp's Edge from Renegade Game Studios. You'll see a play of this. I did a solo play on our channel. And it's actually a really fast solo play. This game is so good. This is a top 10 of the year contender. I absolutely love this game. I had no idea. I tried this on Tabletopia during What was the one? The BGG Dice Tower Con. I tried it by myself, and I was trying to play. I'm just not a play board games on the computer. It's like, just give me a computer game or a Nintendo Switch or whatever, and that's how I'm going to play a game by myself. On the computer's a lot trickier. But I knew there was something to this game trying to do that. So it's a bag builder, and you're trying to defeat enemies. And there are a bunch of different ships that play relatively differently. They give you a different set of chips that you can purchase with all these power-ups. And then there's a bunch of different enemies to fight. And each one really makes the game different. Nah, changing ships is not as big a deal as changing enemies. But you do change those tokens you could purchase. So for the most part, you're getting laser tokens. Are they maneuver tokens? I think they're called maneuver tokens. I always forget and I call them the wrong thing. And then energy tokens. So energy is used to buy other tokens. And by the way, like the Kickstarter bundle here, everything together, $50, playmat. Beautiful, beautiful chips to go in the bag. I am not one, and this is that tactile. I think these must be like the Quacks of Quedlinburg chips that everybody's excited about. They're just beautiful. They're awesome to draw from. I really like those a lot. So you're doing this bag building, and you're drawing these, and you're trying to attack all these little ships that come out in front of you, and often many of the enemies are blocked by those ships, so you have to get through like the whole deck. And then you finish a warp, which basically means you didn't kill them, so you jump out and you jump back in trying to get back to them. You take all the cards, and pandemic style, you shuffle them up, put them back on top. They're preset at the start of the game, but as the round goes on, you get further and further, you might have to fight tougher enemies. You amass so many chips in this game. Now, that's not true for the live play I did. The live play played a lot different from most of the games I played. I was getting rid of a ton of chips and really making my bag efficient and being able to take out the enemies quick. But that was one where I believe the boss is not blocked by the ships. When they're blocked by the ships, every time you kill one of the little starfighters, you get, like, another chip. I'm not joking when I say, like, you start with 11 chips, and you have, like, 30 to 40 chips by the end of the game in a lot of them, which is really, really fun. It's from Scott Alms. It's just awesome. Now, the big to-do is that it is solo only. There's no way to play with other players. There's no multiplayer mode. You're buying a $50 game to play by yourself. I generally, like I said, I'm not a solo gamer, but when you tell me this game is meant for solo and it is this much fun, totally down. Absolutely love Warp's Edge. Great game. Great replayability with all that stuff. Highly, highly, highly recommend Warp's Edge. One of the best games of the year. So, next up is Whistle Mountain. So Whistle Mountain is from Luke Laurie, who I talked about before, Dwelling Zelda Bell, and Scott Caputo, who made Whistle Stop, which was also from Bezier Games, which Whistle Mountain is. So Whistle Mountain is in that same like vibe as Whistle Stop, but totally different. Whistle Stop was like trains, and you're building them across, and you're getting stock, tile-laying game. This one's different. This is a worker placement game, where as a group, you're building a machine on this bridge in this mountain. It's kind of weird. And then as you build too high, the ice caps melt from the pollution, or the ice, the snow. I guess not ice caps. That's kind of our planet. The snow melts from the top of the mountain, and it fills up this space, and water starts to rise in this canyon. Yeah. It has a classic Euro feel. This is like resource, but what's so cool is as you're building, you're placing machines, which are worker placement spaces, and everybody can use them. So you're choosing, kind of like everybody's favorite part of Lords of Waterdeep, you're choosing what things you want to be out on the board. And that's really neat. In addition, it's all like a grid. They're squares. And you're placing dirigibles. You have like a blimp and a dreadnought and a hot air balloon. And they're different sizes. And everything adjacent to them. So the hot air balloon is a one by one. You put it on a square and it triggers the four squares adjacent to it. But the dreadnought is a 3x1. So you put it there and it's 3 + 3 + 1 + 1. So there's 8 spaces that you're triggering. You'll trigger collecting resources, getting water. You're going to trigger machines. So it really builds up. But then what happens is you build these machines. You've got these workers that can end up drowning as the water goes up. So you're trying to get them to build a machine and then move them over where they get promoted and now they become like a foreman. They're going to score points. First person to each of those little levels is going to get a bonus tile. Whew, this is really fun to talk about because it's a great game. This is what I would carry under my arm and just walk around. Who wants to play next? Who wants to play next? Who wants to play next? Right? It's that game. All right, let's play this. Yeah, let me teach you this. Like, people are just going to find that joy. So you're doing that. And as you build above, if you build the machines above the little bridge area, it will then add a water tile. It's like a water strip. And it actually blocks the machines as it goes up. And once that water fills, the game is over. And then you're going to lose points for any of your workers that are underwater. So there's ways to rescue them. You're scoring a ton of points. I played with Kathy and it was 225 to 223. There's a ton of end game points. There's upgrade tiles. I mean, again, it's just that worker placement. You can go here on the board. There's like a whole grid. Or you can just go to spaces on the outside of the board. There's cards. Like, wow. It's just joy in a box. Like, it's joy in a box. It's that strategy element. The theme is kind of weird, although it's kind of fun. It's like weird fun in terms of all that. But it's a great game. And I literally just put these in alphabetical order. But again, a top 10 contender for the year. Really, really like Whistle Mountain. It's just so joyous. It's a point salad. Oh, if I go there, then, oh, I would get that machine and that machine. You know what it does so well that I like? Fleet Dice does this. Marvel Champions does this. Oh, I can also do that? Yes. Oh, and when I go here, I get that? Yes. If I get that upgrade tile, does that yes, right? You keep saying yes to people. Like, yeah, and they get more excited as they see more and more things. It's like literally engine building and also engine building, which is really neat. Whew. There you go, everybody. That's 21 games in 65 minutes. So 5 minutes a game. We did it. There's a whole bunch of games for November and October. 20. See, I can't remember the year because it's been such a crazy year. But those are full reviews. I was doing just some of like, hey, here's some games I played. These are full reviews of games I haven't reviewed. And there's just a couple that, you know, and even Calico I didn't enjoy, but I want to go back and play that. There's games I haven't played. Under Falling Skies, Ruins of Lost Arnak, Kingdom Rush, which I reviewed when that was going on to Kickstarter, Castles of Tuscany, haven't played yet, Agizia, Shifting Sands. I'm just looking at the games that I still have here to play as well. So there's a ton of stuff still to be played, still to be reviewed. I hope everybody's doing well. I hope you check out our channel and subscribe there. It'd be awesome to have more people subscribing on the channel and letting us know what you want to see and what's going to be played there. We've been doing a lot of Marvel Champions because that was selling a lot. We're having a lot of fun playing that. We're probably going to pull back a little bit, but we're still doing some Marvel Thursdays because there's so much Marvel to go through. And Larry and I really like it a lot. So, you know, we're playing what we like. We don't want to just play stuff to play stuff. We want to play stuff to show it off well in terms of all that. Awesome. Hey, I'm going to get a drink. Breath of fresh air. Thanks so much for listening, everybody, to episode 159 of the Portal Gaming Podcast. The force is strong with this one. No joke. I think I said 10 games in there were in the top 10 games of the year. And I can already tell you that there were 10 games that I thought were great this year. So 2020 looks to be a very, very strong year. And it's funny, a lot of people aren't even counting Gloomhaven Jaws of the Lion, which is my hands-down game of the year. But I guess it's my hands-down expansion of the year, depending on how you count that. But that will be a caveated number one or number zero on my list for sure. Because that has just been a great experience playing with my family. All right, thanks everybody. I am your host, The Brand. And until next time, I hope you step into the portal. Bye now.